Welcome to the deep dive. So, if you're a Panetta Institute intern packing your bags for Capitol Hill right now, you are probably visualizing, you know, marble columns and massive federal budgets.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you are probably not thinking about a tiny one-square-mile town with zero traffic lights. But, well, that is exactly where we are going today.
Right. We are looking at a speech from the mayor of Carmel-by-the-Sea. And our mission here is to use it as a motivational roadmap for anyone entering public service, because it really shows how massive federal concepts kind of crash into local reality.
Yeah, and the whole journey starts with the snowball effect of just saying yes. I mean, the speaker wasn't some career politician plotting a run for office. He was a retired builder, right?
Yeah, he just started taking on small community tasks. Like when COVID hits, he steps up to launch these community volunteer groups, Carmel Cares and Carmel Gives.
Exactly. And through that friction, he realizes that volunteering isn't about giving something away. It is actually the mechanism for unearthing your own purpose.
Which is such a cool realization. But the transition from volunteer to mayor is fascinating because he readily admits he was, well, entirely unready.
Oh, completely unready. He had never read a municipal budget or navigated those complex coastal regulations. But his core argument is that his primary qualification wasn't technical expertise.
Wait, hold on. I have to push back there.
Sure could.
If I am voting for someone to run my town, or if I'm drafting federal policy, I kind of want the technical expert. Why should we celebrate a leader who needs a crash course in basic municipal finance on day one?
Well, it's a fair question.
Doesn't that just invite inefficiency at the taxpayer's expense?
So technical expertise definitely matters, but in local governance, having a rigid blueprint often just shatters on contact with reality. Admitting you need the council's collective knowledge isn't a weakness, you know?
Right. It forces you to listen to people who know more than you do.
Exactly. If a leader walks in assuming they have all the answers, they alienate the very community they need to actually implement the policy. It's about building teams.
That actually explains his stark realization once he took the council chair. Like, writing the policy is easy. Dealing with the people is the brutal part.
Oh, yeah. Because constituents do not show up to city council meetings when they are happy.
Right. They show up scared about losing their business or furious about a zoning change.
Precisely. So the speech highlights a critical operational tactic. Before you try to fix the technical problem, you have to absorb the emotional one. If a citizen doesn't feel genuinely heard, even the most efficient policy is going to be rejected.
And that is where the structure of the council itself comes into play, because the speaker explicitly points out that none of their major wins were his own doing.
Yeah, he is very clear that it was never a one-man show. It required grueling debate and real collective governance from the entire council under his leadership.
Because you simply can't mandate a solution from the top down and expect it to stick.
Right. And the results of that collective friction really speak for themselves. I mean, they secured a $17 million public-private partnership to restore their historic library.
Which is massive for a town that size.
It is. And that didn't happen by executive order. It happened because the council built enough community trust to convince private donors to co-invest with public funds. They even managed to squeeze operating expenses down to 85% of revenue.
Wait, how do you actually pull that off without massive layoffs or cutting services?
Basically, by grinding through the budget line by line as a unified council, they found consensus on essential maintenance rather than fighting over vanity projects.
And that unified front gave them the political capital to tackle the really messy hyper-local disputes. Take pickleball, for instance.
Oh, right. They banned it at a local park.
Yeah. Which sounds completely trivial to a federal staffer, but the mechanism behind it is critical.
How so?
Well, the council had to physically stand in the shoes of the neighbors living 100 feet from all that noise, absorb the intense backlash from the players, and just make a highly unpopular call for the greater good.
Same with adding street addresses for the first time in a century. I mean, it required a resident advocate doing all the tedious committee work to finally push it through.
Those hyperlocal battles are exactly why this matters for federal policy. It is the difference between steering a go-kart and a freight train.
I like that analogy.
Right. In local government, the steering wheel is connected directly to the axle. You vote for 16 new stop signs, and the very next week, you physically see cars slowing down on your drive to work.
While on Capitol Hill, you are steering a massive train. You pull a legislative lever, and it takes years for the momentum to shift down the tracks.
Exactly. So as you head to Washington to draft legislation, you have to remember where that train ultimately stops. Every massive federal bill eventually lands on a local street.
Or a city council will have to figure out how to pay for it and then explain it to angry neighbors.
And that awareness completely reshapes the goal of public service. The speaker isn't chasing a legacy or re-election. He is choosing to chase usefulness.
Yeah, he is literally leaving the mayor's chair to put his yellow volunteer vest back on, picking up trash and planting native flora.
It grounds the whole concept of public service in tangible reality rather than abstract power.
It really does.
So as you pack up for D.C., chew on this. If every federal law eventually becomes a local reality, how differently would congressional staffers draft legislation if they were legally required to personally implement it in their own neighborhoods first?